Violet Brown driving.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The game on lock for sure.
Tatum inbounds to Hayward. Diagonal kick out. Kemba Walker. His three blocked by Tybalt. Tobias Harris will dribble out the clock. And the Celtics put a scare into them late. But the Sixers get the signature win they wanted and needed in the spotlight game. And the Celtics suffer their first defeat on their home floor. The final score, Philadelphia 115, Boston 109.
We just have to learn how to win. We have a lot of lapses, you know, during these games. You know, we have stretches where we're playing super well. And then we have lapses and we just have times where we're just like, it's bad. You know, it just looks really bad. So we just have to just tone that down a little bit.
I want to examine that comment a little further because I don't know if we talked about it enough. That's Kemba Walker after Thursday night's loss at home to the 76ers. First home loss for the Celtics and of the season. And welcome into the Sports Hub Celtics Show. No Chris Gasper today. He's off in the hellhole that is Cincinnati to cover the Patriots and Bengals. So you have yours truly, Jim Murray, along with Tim McCone and Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal. And you, if you want to join the show, 617-779-0985. So this was I think you could argue this is the worst loss of the year for the Celtics, not just because it was the first home loss of the year, not just because it's another one that they dropped to the 76ers, but just everything else that surrounds it. You know, they now have like almost a week off following this game. They're coming off a bad loss the night before to the Indiana Pacers where they lead by 10, but the bench blows it. Well, the bench kind of blows as it is, and they end up blowing that game. It was just everything that surrounded this was just, it was ugly. Like, and this was such a good test for them, and they failed it. And then after the game, you have Kemba Walker saying, we need to learn how to win. You had that same kind of commentary, McCone, last year by the a-hole point guard who's now gone in Brooklyn dealing with a fake shoulder injury. And at that point, we were like, this is just Kyrie. He's being a selfish prick, and this is just, you know, Okay, yeah, all that's true in terms of his personality, but this year you have the nice point guard that's a joy to watch and loves being here and is always all smiles saying essentially the same kind of thing. So what's that say about the young players? Does that maybe mean that Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, some of these young guys, they don't know how to win yet? They just feel like they can show up. And I feel that way a little bit more about Tatum than anything else. I think he's been... It's an odd juxtaposition with Jason Tatum this year. At times he flashes, and you can understand why people would never want to trade him. You can look at him as one of the building blocks in the future of the team. But in these last couple of games, he's just been so overall, he's so inconsistent. His handle's been bad. The other night, like in Indianapolis, it showed it's like he hung over, looked like he didn't want to play, he couldn't lead that second unit. So I wonder, I think he's lumping himself in as well because he's only ever played for a mediocre Charlotte team, but I don't know. I think that kind of speaks volumes because you heard the same thing last year from the a-hole point guard. This year you get it from the nice point guard. Maybe these young guys just don't know how to win. They feel like because of their talent, because of guys, the ability of guys like Tatum, they can just show up on a night-to-night basis and not maybe give max effort. And they feel like they can, some sloppiness ain't going to catch up with me tonight. And they end up losing a game like that.
All right, it certainly made me a little nervous when I first heard it. The key difference, though, is that we need to learn how to win. And it's not him listing his accomplishments and then talking
Fair.
About how everyone else needs to figure it out.
Yeah.
And now it's on them. So that's the one thing I would say is different. But certainly, you know, I'm with you. It's been frustrating to watch the mid-range game by Jason Tatum. Like, just scrap that. Just go to the basket or shoot threes, but, like, just get rid of, like, the fadeaways and all that stuff I could do without. And you're right. The inconsistency is certainly frustrating there. But in terms of Kyrie, that was on such another level. It was close to what he said, but it's on such another level where I'm not worried about it. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you get this night from Joel Embiid where he puts up, 38 and 12, whatever it was, and it's like he's motivated from the few prior days blowing that he gets on national television for Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal, and it's just almost, I don't know if you feel this way, like I just feel like as a fan of the league, and I love the star power of the league, and Embiid, like a talented big is a blast to watch. But I almost get annoyed because you get a night like that after he gets motivated by two former players that are just like chuckling it up and having a laugh at his expense. He has that kind of ability on a night-to-night basis, and I get it. The slog of an 82-game season, some of these, it just happens. No matter what team you watch, there's nights that players take off. They just do. It's going to happen. But Embiid, more often than not, he's soft. He doesn't give you max effort, but he does because he gets blood by Shaq and Charles Barkley. That's frustrating to me. It's kind of annoying. Like, you have the ability. You can be better. You essentially choose not to.
We used to see it all the time here with Rajon Rondo, right?
Right.
And if
yeah,
it was a primetime game, there were times that they play the Heat, and you'd be like, oh, my God, Rondo's the best player on the court. And then, you know, a random game against Charlotte, you're like, this guy sucks. What's going on? So, yeah, certainly we've seen it here in Boston, too. And Embiid's, I think, pretty similar in kind of that. When you see him play and he's motivated, you're like, this guy might be the best player in the NBA right now. And often, you know, he doesn't play like it.
All right, and the other thing, too, in these last couple of games, you've seen the sloppiness, too many turnovers, which has been one of the problems for this team, really, since the rip. Sloppy on defense, and maybe not having Marcus Smart played into that as well. But it seems like a lot of the same struggles keep cropping up. Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. Follow him on Twitter. Sign up, bostonsportsjournal.com. Makes a great holiday gift. What have you made of the last couple of nights and some of the coaching decisions of Brad Stevens, especially down the stretch?
Yeah, it was a tough couple games for everyone, I think, for the Celtics. Defensively, I think you make a great point, Jim. I actually looked this up. Guess where the Celtics are in, like, crunch time defense in, like, the fourth quarter?
Well, like 20th?
Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, somewhere around there, I would think, yeah.
28th.
Oh, my God.
Which is kind of crazy, and they've been able to offset it because the offense has been so good late that they've been just able to outscore teams, but obviously, in these couple games, they didn't, you know, especially in the Pacers game, they just couldn't get a stop late in those games. And then, you know, you couldn't stop Embiid in this one. So, and that kind of, you know, goes to the, with guys like Tatum and Brown, just like the sloppiness. I think that's what Kemba was kind of talking about here in terms of like, we're not good enough to afford to take plays off on defense against elite teams, especially. And so this was hopefully a little wake-up call for those guys.
In terms of rotation changes, what would you like to see? So, like, you know, going into Thursday's game on Felger and Mavs, we took some calls for people that are like, watch, Cantor's going to do a good job on Embiid. And he did. Like, you break it down. Like, Cantor was pretty damn good on Embiid that night, but you still see too much Tice. And I like Tice, but he gets bowled over.
He has no shot in that.
Absolutely not. But why not? I don't know. Like, a little bit, maybe can Poirier give you something at least, maybe a little bit more defensively? He can't be any worse than Cantor defensively. Could Taco Fall do something? Like, just in terms of some of the coaching decisions made by, in terms of the rotation by Stevens there, could there be some changes, at least for the next matchup or if they have to go up against Giannis?
Yeah, sadly, I think, like, Cantor's, like, the best you're going to do against Embiid. Like, he's not going to help you against, like, Giannis in that match, or anyone you have to guard in the perimeter. He's going to be a big problem, but Embiid, like, he's got the strength down there and the rebounding to handle him. And but you're right, like, I'd like to see what, you know, Poirier, like, we need to see what he can do at some point. And this is the matchup you maybe got him for. And if he can help you, then you maybe trade him or open up that roster spot for someone else. Taco, it'd be fun to see for just the, you know, the crowd would go nuts in that kind of situation if he came off the bench. But I think he obviously still is a year or two away at this point. But, yeah, I mean, these are the kind of games where, you know, something like that where he obviously has it going against everyone. Embiid, you know, you throw the kitchen sink, you try things out at him just because you want to figure out what you have on this team right now.
Where are you on Jason Tatum? Because this is, you know, talking earlier, I get frustrated by him because, and watching him this year specifically, because at times it's like, okay, like he talks about getting, you know, obviously has the tutelage under Kobe Bryant last year and going into this season, he talked about how he's going to try to remove himself from that. But earlier in the week, he's talking about how he wants to be an all-star. He gets on Ainge saying he should have been the number one pick, and he's talking about a max contract next year. But I just think he's so far away from what he thinks he is. I do still think that when it comes to Jason Tatum, there's a lack of perspective, I guess. I think his shot has kind of regressed. I think it's kind of the same as it was last year. There's too many fallaway jumpers. There's still too much Kobe-fication in his game. I think his passing is sloppy. His defense can be meh, especially when Marcus Smart's not out there to help him out. Like, I always think of it this way. Like, if there was going to be a trade for a big or some kind of trade, and you have to have either Brown or Tatum on the board, with the way that Brown has played, and as he was one of the best players down that terrible stretch of last year into this year, I think he's more consistent than Tatum, and I would move Tatum over Brown.
Yeah, the fact that this question has come up now, Jim, is fascinating, because a year ago, Jalen, I feel like, was far behind the possibility
of
he was going to be better long-term. And now, you know, I think they're kind of neck and neck there. And to your point, like, I mean, he's shooting 40% from the field. This is 25 games. That's not all-star level play late yet. And the encouraging thing about Thursday night was he did come back after a rough game and hit those two threes late in the game. So, you know, he's someone who can knock stuff down in those big moments. He has throughout his whole career. So that's big. But again, with him and Jaylen Brown right now, consistency is just the biggest thing. Like, you need it on both ends of the floor. If you're going to be an all-star, you need to be taking good shots. Like, he needs to just, that floater guys he was taking, he needs to just throw that in the trash.
Oh, I hate it.
He just needs to, like, take that out, like erase the tapes of that. That has not been a good shot for him all year long. And, yeah, getting to the rim, like, again, in these matchups, he needs to just stay with it. And it's – I think they're sticking with both these guys. In my mind, I think the bets are on both these guys now. I don't see any of them going anywhere, especially this year or next year. But long-term picture, you have to see them kind of complement each other with Hayward, with Kemba out there, and that's going to be an ongoing, you know, challenge for this group.
Jimmy in New Hampshire, you're first up on the Sports Hub Celtics show this afternoon. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, good afternoon. Yeah, hey, yeah, Jim Murray, do you remember? I was one of the guys calling on Friday saying the Cantor was going to do a good job on Embiid.
You were right, Jimmy.
Laughed at me.
I know. You were right. You were right. And I certainly saw a lot more booing about Cantor on Twitter as well. So you were right. Good job there.
It's just that he's strong. You know, because against the other centers, he looks terrible. But Embiid's not that fast.
Yeah.
So when Embiid just tries to load into somebody, like Cantor is one guy in the NBA who's strong enough to be like, no, dude, you're going to stay right where you are. You're not going through me. I could talk about so many different things, but whatever happened, like when the Celtics used to play Jordan, right? And we'd be like, let Jordan score 60. Just don't let anyone else score. Why wouldn't we do that with Embiid? Like, if you watch the game, guys, Jason Tatum's defense was horrific.
Yeah.
Like, he's always just, like, looking around, like, do I switch? Or, you know, and they just, he's standing there. I don't understand why we don't just put, okay, when Embiid's playing, Cantor, you're getting him, dude, and he's got to score on you, but we all know that. But everybody else, stay with your guys. Like, why don't we think that strategy would work?
I don't know. And the defense, I think, is what showed me on Thursday night. Like, without Marcus Smart, Tatum's defense is lax. It just is. And that's a game where, you know, look, you obviously miss him there. So, I don't know. That was a little bit jarring in that the Celtics have so far exceeded my expectations. Going into the season, I'll keep saying it until I'm blue in the face. All I was hoping for this year, coming off last year's just horror show and how hateable that they were overall, was just give me a good product on a random Wednesday night in January. And they've done that, and they've exceeded that. And actually, now I feel like, ooh, this team actually could come out of the East. They could. But after that, like, if Embiid's going to try, if all it takes is getting poked and prodded a little bit by a couple of former pros on national television, you're going to get that out of them? Ugh. Uh-oh. Maybe the 76ers are going to be a little bit more of a problem than I thought that they were. Cam and Taunton on Jason Tatum. Hello.
Jim, I've said this about this guy since he's coming to league. There's just something about this guy that rubs me the wrong way. He's very talented. I've never seen that. He's very talented. But the entitlement, every time he goes to the basket, screaming at the refs like he's a 20-year pro, like he's LeBron or like he's Durant, the guy who earns those calls. And the lack of effort on defense. The point of a young guy is when you're supposed to try hard night after night on a random Tuesday night in Memphis in December. That's the point of having young guys. When he's having a bad offensive night, he doesn't try on defense. I'm with you. I'm trading him before I'm trading Brown, because at least I know in Brown, I'm going to get effort. There's ability there, and he's going to try. I think he was hurt to start last year. In the second half of last year, he was your second-best player behind Kyrie. Tatum is very talented, but he just rubs me the wrong way.
Thanks, Cam. And it's been day one. Day one since he came into the league that he's been bitching to the refs. So, I don't know. Like him, he's got to slow, like, take a step back. Get a little bit more personal perspective of who you are as a player. And maybe he just needs I thought last year would have humbled him a little bit, but it doesn't seem like it has. Like, you know, he's got to just pay attention to the little details. You know, maybe show up a little bit earlier, watch a little bit more film, put a little bit more effort in, because he just feels like, well, I'm so talented, and he is, and there's such a high upside. Like, stop reading the press clippings. Stop buying into all the hype. Like, put in a little bit more effort, because there is something to his game that annoys the hell out of me. It's just it's an inconsistency overall, and the bitching of the refs. Like, enough with that, too. So your thoughts on the Celtics, this current two-game losing streak that they have against, Pacers. They're better than them. That was a brutal loss. We'll touch on that a little bit coming up here in Sports Hub Celtics show. I mean, you have a 10-point lead, and the bench blows it there, so there's some issues there. So they still certainly need some help, and the Brad Wanamaker train, that hype train's come to a stall. So you have that, followed by this loss at home Thursday night to the 76ers. So a lot to talk about with this team at 617-779-0985. We'll get to more of your calls next. Sports Hub Celtics show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics show. This is Jaylen Brown, and home of the Boston Celtics basketball, 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And Embiid is, in my opinion, he could be. He's the toughest player in the league to match up with. But we don't talk about him the way we talk about Luka, Giannis, Anthony Davis, LeBron, James. We don't ever say that about him. And it's frustrating for me because I picked the Sixers to get to the finals. And
How are you feeling about that pick right now?
They ain't got no chance. They ain't got no chance, Ernie. Toronto, when you just say, okay, when the season started, we're like, okay, Milwaukee is in that conversation.
Philadelphia.
That was it.
Possibly, but that's it.
That was it. It was two teams. But right now, Boston's really played better. Toronto's played better. And that shouldn't be. Because Philly, you give me Embiid and Simmons for the next 10 years, I'm like, but they're not playing. So I don't want to jump totally off, but I'm in the air.
Anders to Embiid against Kanter. Embiid tries to rise into contact. Instead, takes a step back and just knocks down another one. Embiid having an MVP night here in Boston, and the Sixers lead by 7.
Sports Hub Celtics Show, 98.5 is Sports Hub. So Celtics fall to the 76ers at home, 115-109 on Thursday night. Big night from Joel Embiid. Responding to the criticism you heard there from Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley on the national broadcast, 38 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists in that 76ers win. And, you know, McCone and I were talking about it earlier. It's Jim Murray and Tim McCone, and we have Brian Robb alongside as well. And you at 617-779-0985. No Gasper today. He should be able to do this kind of thing night after night. McCone mentioned Rajon Rondo. It's kind of like that. Like, oh, I'll show up when the lights are brightest. It's a national game. He has the ability to do it every night rather than showing up just certain nights. He's that good. He has the potential to be great and an all-time great. And it's just, as a fan of the league, and, you know, I like watching a talented big like Embiid, it's just frustrating. It's like you kind of feel ripped off a little bit. Like, that's why he's worth criticizing. Shaq and Barkley were right to do that. They were right to blow him because he's capable of doing what he did Thursday night. I just wonder, though, now, as a Celtics fan and wanting the Celtics to succeed, and my expectations change for them for the good after the way that they played the first few months of the season, if they awoke a sleeping giant. So on the one end, like, it's frustrating as a fan of the league, see Embiid dogging it most of the time. But then they just wake this kid up, and now it's like, oh, boy, the Celtics aren't going to get past this team.
Well, that's the concern,
because
they
have no ability to stop them right now.
I was going to say, if you're Boston, that's the concern too, right? Especially when you consider that, for the most part, I think the Celtics give maximum effort on a day-in and day-out basis, and there are some other teams that kind of put it on cruise control. And once the postseason hits, it gets ratcheted up, and all of a sudden, like, oh, we really don't have an answer for Joel Embiid. So is that going to be the case? Well, you know, that last game against the Sixers was kind of a preview of that. Like, right now, clearly, you probably need to add another big if you're going to survive against the 76ers in a playoff series.
And who could that be? Who's a realistic big that they could target? Steve in Medford, you have some thoughts?
Yeah. So when you look at, so by the way, I'm sure Brian's going to talk about this in a little bit, but tomorrow's December 15th, which is a really important day on the NBA calendar, because that means that any player who signed in the offseason can now be traded. So I think you're going to see a lot of trades happen in the next couple of weeks. And I think a couple of guys that I have in my mind that I'm looking at are from the Golden State Warriors. Now, the Warriors obviously sucked this year, and they got a lot of guys on veteran minimum deals. And I think two players that I think the Celtics could really use is Alec Burks, who's this nice shooting guard off the bench, a veteran. I think he'd come and give you some three-point shooting. And the other guy is Willie Cauley-Stein, the 7-footer, used to be on the Kings for the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. Now, good athletic big, and I think he could be a guy you could throw out there. I think you could get him for dirt cheap because he's only making like $1.5 million a year. I think those are more realistic targets than I hear some people talking like, oh, let's go get Kevin Love and Andre Drummond. Like, I don't want those guys because that means you have to give one of those core pieces up to match salaries.
And how about another name from Andrew in Boston?
Hey, I'm thinking Nerlens Noel from OKC. They're taking anything they can get for players, and he's athletic. He's from the area. He can jump out the roof. You could maybe throw him against the Freak. You never know with matchups, and he used to play with the Sixers, so he's got some hatred there. I think he could really fit for the Celtics.
And he loves himself some weed. So of these names that have been thrown around, B-Rob, Willie Cauley-Stein, I know that's one that's been mentioned by Jimmy Stewart, the executive producer of Felger Maz, Nerlens Noel, his name has come up. Marcin Gortat is another guy, even though he's older. What's a realistic big that the Celtics might be able to bring in?
Yeah, I think these callers nailed a couple. Again, the price, what these guys are making is going to be huge. So you need the cheap pieces because, like you said, you don't have much salary to move on this roster because you don't want to move any of your top five guys, essentially. So
Noel's, you know, on a veteran minimum.
Exactly, he's on $2 million. Yeah. Cauley-Stein is $2 million. Alec Burks, I like a lot. That's $2 million. Because one thing I think we learned, Jim, from these two games, the Celtics bench is a player short right now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it could be a shooter like Burks because, again, you can't really count on Wanamaker and Ojeleye to, like, create against a tough Sixers defense. And then, yeah, like when Cantor or Tice get into foul trouble, and if it, who knows what Rob Williams' like health status is, like you're going to need someone else there. So the question that we'll continually ask here is how much the front office is going to invest in the now with this team. How much do they believe that they can do it? Because if they think this is an opening this year, then you have to add a guy or two here.
How much has their perspective changed, you think, a bit on the Memphis pick for the way that they've been playing? Like, they're almost like this year's Sacramento Kings, like, you know, because that pick got devalued because the Kings actually played really well last year and, you know, defied expectations. You're kind of seeing the same thing with Memphis. They're better than a lot of people thought that they were going to be, and Ja Morant is, you know, been awesome so far. Are they going to be less willing to hang on to that and maybe use it as a trade chip?
They have to figure out when the best time to sell high, if that is, no question. Because that is, like you said, the Kings situation is just the ultimate, you know, foreshadowing caution story, essentially. Yeah. And they sold high in the Brooklyn pick, and they sold, obviously, low. And you got Romeo Langford, a guy you're not going to get anything out of this season, it looks like. So now the question is there a player good enough to give up that Memphis pick now in the present? Because even if you get, you know, it could land 7th or 8th this year, because Morant and Jackson are just that good already for them. And whether or not that player becomes available is the question. I would guess no, just based on how much this team values picks. But at the same time, you do have a little bit of a window here of Kevin Durant out this season. And for as good as the East is, like Durant and Kyrie long-term with a good building blocks in Brooklyn, that's going to be a real pain in the butt long-term on top of everything else there. So this could be a window to kind of, you know, make a splasher move now, essentially, if you want.
Let's go to Peter in Jamaica Plain. Wants to talk about Jason Tatum. Hey, Peter.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I've turned a little bit on Tatum. No, I've never heard of an athlete, maybe in all of Boston sports, but the Celtics, who would come out and say, I'm going to score 20 points this year. I'm going to be an all-star. I mean, you do it on the floor. He's not an all-star right now.
No,
he cost us the Philly game. He cost us the Philly game. I've watched it twice. And Jaylen Brown, this is the other thing. It's eerily similar to last year, where there's too many good players that need shots. Because Jaylen Brown, who's been scoring 30 points, he had 8 shots and 8 points. And that's just kind of brings me back to last year when there weren't enough balls for the players they have.
Yeah, and Peter, on that, I'm going to let you go because we're up against it. It's you saw like the glut at wing on Thursday night, so that's frustrating. And on Tatum, it's just he's made bad decisions at key points in these last couple of games, and he's really hurt the Celtics in the last couple of games. And for all that he has talked, like you were just mentioning, Peter, and like I'm going to be an all-star, I'm going to average 20. He's under the tutelage of Kobe. Yeah, he got Kobe-fied just in terms of the attitude. He hadn't backed it up with the play. That's frustrating. And he's just, but then again, he hits that dagger three or, you know, gets him back in it at the end. It's like, oh, okay, all my doubts, I should shut the hell up. I just got blood by Jason Tatum. But if you look at the overall performance, especially since the beginning of the year and for all that he's talked, like, it's just, it's too inconsistent. It's way too inconsistent. So if it does come down that you got to move one between him and Jaylen Brown, I'm hanging on to Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum, it's just I'm frustrated, and there's too much attitude there, and there's too much of a lack of self-awareness, I think, is his biggest issue. Sports Up headlines here with Tim McCone. One of the callers, or it might have been actually B-Rob, that mentioned Kevin Love. Kevin Love is on the trading block in Cleveland. Remember when the Celtics could have traded for Kevin Love? Let's dial it back like it's 6-7 years ago, and the Celtics and Danny Ainge were lusting for Kevin Love, even though his body is made out of Triscuits and not actual bone. But should the Celtics be interested? We'll touch on that. And is there real interest? We'll get to that coming up next, along with some thoughts from Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston, here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
There's one player that a lot of teams have on their radar, Kevin Love in Cleveland. You know, he's signed for another 3 years, and there are a lot of teams, especially in the West, who would like more size, you know, to get in that championship chase. And I'm told that Cleveland is ready now to listen to offers on Kevin Love as we get to that December 15th date and then the February trade deadline. You know, if somebody blows them away with an offer, this is a team clearly in a rebuild, and Kevin Love is still a player, who, look at our teams who are playing tonight, who've all had interest in the recent past with him. Boston, Portland, Denver. He's going to be a player very much in demand, and I think there's going to be a lot of conversations between Cleveland and teams all over the league about Love.
Sports Up Celtics Show, 98.5 Sports Up. Chris Gasper off today. Jim Murray and Tim McCone. Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, and you at 617-779-0985. You want to unload any Celtics thoughts over these last couple of games that they've lost to the Pacers and the 76ers. But that was Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN on Kevin Love being on the trading block for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And with that, we welcome in Chris Forsberg of NBC Sports Boston, covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. He joins us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hey, Chris.
What up? What's going on?
Not too much. Should the Celtics and Danny Ainge be interested in Kevin Love? It's like it's 7 years ago all over again.
I was going to say, is it 2014 or 2013, whenever he was frolicking around Fenway and popping up Rondo?
Yeah.
No. I mean, I just can't unequivocally scream it loud enough. No. Like, one, Kevin Love isn't the same player that he used to be, and there's no reason to believe that even on a championship caliber team that'll necessarily get back to that level. And, I mean, he signed up for way into the future and his injury concerns. And then what you'd have to move to get him, like the Celtics would have to move Gordon Hayward or a contract of that caliber to go get him. It just, there on no level does it make any sense for the Boston Celtics.
What about those that would want to argue, though, that they need help on the bench? He would actually give them real secondary scoring. Like, I'm with you. Like, he's made out of Triscuits and has been for years, and the price would be too high. But you get that there's an argument because of the way that the bench is played.
I don't know. I can't sell myself in any shape or form. Like, again, if you want to jump in the time machine and tell me that he's the key piece to the Rondo era Celtics getting over the hump, sure. But I just don't see it in this day and age. And even, like, you know, people want to throw out Tristan Thompson. So say the Cavs move Love and he eventually ends up in Portland, which seems like the most logical destination. You know, then the Cavs sort of have this fire sale, and by March they're buying out guys, and Tristan Thompson lands on the market. Could he help the Celtics in a role? Like, maybe. But the other night he was 1 of 7 at the free throw line. He had 5 turnovers. I don't know. As I sit here trying to figure out who in the world the Celtics could go get to upgrade at the big man position, I just keep coming back to, I don't know if there's anyone out there that you would get without overpaying drastically, either for a rental or in terms of talent that you would have to give up to get him. And I think they just might have to be content to ride this thing out with Cantor and Daniel Tice.
Well, what about some realistic names? Because we took some calls earlier, and you keep kind of hearing the same names, Willie Cauley-Stein, Nerlens Noel. I brought up Marcin Gortat. Like, you just don't think those guys would be able – that won't put you over the hump of potentially trying to, you know, match up against Embiid or even Giannis and get going on a deep run.
Yeah, I mean, Tice has been very good defensively, and I get it. He's, like, overmatched against these beefy bigs. Like, you can't put him out there for long stretches against Jokic and probably not Embiid and probably not Giannis. But, you know, I'd like that they started him the other night, at least got a gauge on it. I think you can roll Cantor in there. I mean, the wild card to me in all this is whether Robert Williams can ever get healthy. And can he at least help you run big guys up and down the court and provide, help you with that athleticism? I mean, that's asking a lot for a player that just hasn't been healthy enough to stay on the court for long stretches. But I'm incredibly intrigued by what he can bring. And I was going through the data last year of like guys that matched up well against Embiid, trying to find any name that would be available. And you know, all the guys that are out there just out of your league, like Marc Gasol, you know, is someone that the Celtics fans would dream about, but Toronto's playing well. He's in his contract. Like, even, you know, maybe people were sitting there before the year hoping he'd be a buyout candidate, but now it's definitely not going to happen. You could sell me on someone like Taj Gibson in New York. Like, they're going to have to make a move. The Knicks should want to get future assets. He's held up well against Embiid in the past and has sort of experience, but I just don't see a name out there that you're going to go get that's going to move the needle any more than what you've got. And I think you have to rely, you have to hope that Brad Stevens can put these guys in position defensively where, you know, you mask Cantor's deficiency in the pick and roll, where but he can hold up against post ups, where you have Tice out there to scramble out to the 3-point line against floor switchers. It might just be best to like put the confidence in those guys.
It's Chris Forsberg, covers the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston here on the Sports Hub Celtics show. So based on that, it sounds to me like, Chris, you think that they're screwed against the likes of the 76ers and the Milwaukee Bucks.
Well, here's the thing. Look, they beat the Bucks early in the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't necessarily think it's a – I think they like the matchup against the Bucks. You know, I think they can get away against a team like that. There's just nothing you can do to really stop Giannis. as long as you don't have Kyrie Irving on the floor calling for switches, you at least have to give yourself a chance. So I don't mind with the personnel that they've got that matchup. I mean, listen, Philadelphia is certainly just daunting because of their overall size, and you add Al Horford into that mix when he's healthy, and it becomes a little bit more daunting. But here's the thing. You know, neither of the two games against Philadelphia did I think the big man position cost you the game. This last one especially, where, you know, I get it. Embiid was really good, and it goes beyond the 38 points. Like, defensively, he was a monster there at the end, swallowing up Tice. He passed out of the double teams, and, you know, he's normally very turnover prone, and the Celtics, I think, only had him give the ball up twice. So, you know, you got to be better, and that's being crisper on your rotations, not leaving shooters, hoping Mike Scott doesn't knock down 5 3-pointers in a game. But, like, I think you can get away with it. And if teams continue to try to force the ball through the post when they feel like they have those mismatches against Cantor and Tice, it sometimes takes them out of their offense. I thought the Celtics did a good job against Denver that night. And, you know, even though Jokic got 30 points. So I'm just saying, I think you can get by with it. And as much as you want, I get it. You look at the Celtics roster and you say, well, you know, Enes Kanter and Daniel Tice, is that a championship caliber big front court? And no, I get it. But, you know, you've got 4 all-stars around them. You can't have all-stars at every position. And so you just have to deal with the deficiencies you have in some state or form. And I think you can get away with it if your other 4 stars play to the level they're capable of. And the other night, they did not do that.
So, and at the risk of putting words in your mouth, because I thought it was a sloppy game defensively Thursday night, and I even thought it was against the Pacers the night prior. But just with Thursday, I get where you're coming from. Like, you know, you can let Embiid get 38 and he got him a monster game like that. But if you, it sounds to me like if Marcus Smart was there, he's healthy, that's maybe a different outcome.
I think it helps, but, you know, certainly you can tell me that having Horford there would complicate matters too for the, so I want to see these teams at full strength.
Yeah.
They've got the 2 more regular season matchups will help, but they play on another second night of a back-to-back in January. There's a February Saturday game that will maybe be our, you know, the final chance for right before the deadline where the Celtics will have to sort of make or break, right? Like, are they going to make a move? Are they going to try to upgrade this front court? Maybe we'll know better by then exactly where they stand. But I guess just the early season way I feel about it is I just don't know if there's something that makes sense out there. And yeah, like, listen, Marcus Smart isn't going to be able to defend Joel Embiid for over a 7-game series, but can he be a nice curveball and can he give you some versatility to go smaller in those instances? Like, I'd like to see it. I just want to see if it's feasible over longer stretches. And frankly, the Celtics haven't been healthy enough this year to have any idea what they look like as a complete puzzle.
What's your frustration level with Jason Tatum? Just because I think he's just been so inconsistent, and I think he helped cost them these last couple of games in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you know, I do think he'll shoot better as it goes along. He's certainly in a funk right now. He needs to get back to sort of taking higher percentage shots. I mean, the floater's just not working right now. And, you know, maybe that's some of that the other night was Embiid. But, you know, I will say this. He stepped up in those crunch time moments and made big plays. I think the biggest frustration the other night was the inbound play where, you know, whether the last 2-minute report says that Jaylen Brown got dragged down or not, you can't put yourself in that position where you're throwing a risky pass. And, you know, I don't even know if Jaylen Brown doesn't get dragged down if they complete that pass. And so, listen, that's not just on Tatum. That's on the Celtics as a whole. I don't know why they weren't better ready for Philly to press there, why they didn't have more bodies back. You know, someone needed to call a timeout in that situation and just collect themselves. You know, that's it. It's just like consistency with Tatum. He's got all the natural skill. He makes scoring 20 points look easy. If he ever got more of those layups to fall, he's going to be like a 26, 28 point scorer with just showing up and being using his natural talents. But I do want to see him sort of bring it every night to not just have the loud moments at late in the game, like be there and steady the ship when things start going awry. He's been out there a lot with that second unit on his own and struggled. Like, maybe the health will help that second unit rotation. But yeah, certainly I think you want to see more consistency out of Tatum. If only because you know how impactful he can be when he plays to his full potential.
Chris Forsberg covering the Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. Handsome as always. Always appreciate your time as well. Aww. You know, looking at the schedule, basically a week between games. What do you do with all the free time in your hands, Chris?
No, I wish we had free time. I mean, like, this grind does not stop. We have shows to put on NBC Sports Boston and podcasts to record, but certainly, it's just weird. I mean, it's weird that the Celtics have to sit here on a 2-day break I mean, off on a two-game losing streak and sort of like soak it in. You know, I guess you don't want to enter a break with a ton of momentum and lose it, but a chance for them to sort of get back and hopefully get healthy. And well, again, I want to see this team when it's at full strength, and maybe we'll see that by the end of the month. That would be nice.
All right. I always appreciate you taking the time, Chris. If I don't talk to you beforehand, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Right back at you. All right, take care, guys.
Take care. Chris Forsberg again joins us via the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Catch him, NBC Sports Boston. Again, always has a great head of hair, always well-dressed. And catch his podcast, the Enes Kanter podcast as well, NBCSportsBoston.com. All right, any leftover Celtics thoughts you want to join the show, 617-779-0985. What a weird scheduling quirk, though. Like, so they don't play. And when I looked at it yesterday, I was like, okay, what's coming up next? Wednesday? Like a whole week before they got to go travel and see Luka Doncic and the Mavericks? Seems silly. But hey, good for them. Maybe they can rest up, get healthy, and come back with a win Wednesday against the Mavs. I did think that there was one really good thing that came out of Thursday night's game. Really had nothing to do with what happened on the floor, obviously, with them losing to the 76ers. It had more to do with the game presentation or something lack thereof. I want to touch on that coming up next in the final segment of the Sports Hub Celtics show this week here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. The excitement is building for another banner.
Round for three, got it.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Al Horford on the Jumbotron here at the Garden. He will stand up and get a very well-deserved ovation.
Yeah. Boo!
Would you
Boo!
Please? Really?
I gotta be one of those contrary people. You know how I love Al.
Love you, Max. John Grandy and Cedric Maxwell. Before tip-off of Thursday night's game, terrible loss for the Celtics on Thursday night. They fall to the 76ers, and really thanks to Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley chirping Joel Embiid, they might have awoken a literal sleeping giant. But there was one lone bright spot that I loved about Thursday night, and really had nothing to do with the game at all. Final segment here of the Sports Hub Celtics show this week here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. No, it had to do with the pregame, and maybe the most un-Celtic thing imaginable, maybe like the most un-NBA thing, and maybe this is now a trend that's going to start happening. The Celtics didn't give Al Horford a stupid tribute video. Yeah, the fans gave him the standing O, and rightfully so. Like, that part, fine. Like, I have no problem with that. But there was no stupid tribute video, which has become way too much of a thing for the Celtics and the NBA overall. The Atlanta Hawks actually gave one to Dwight Howard. He played there for, I mean, like, he was there for a cup of coffee. He didn't do anything. And it's Dwight Howard. He's like, been cooked for years. And he even got one. But the Celtics not giving him one? Like, I'm kind of stunned, and I'm so happy that it happened. And you could argue, well, but Al didn't play in that game, Murray. Blah, and you'd be right. But this is what I love. I have it on pretty good authority. Some of the works for the team that they didn't have one planned regardless of him playing or not, which makes me so happy. Like, that warms my cold, cold heart because it shows me the Celtics are actually smartening up. And not everything is like, oh, wee. Oh, it's yay, green team. It's, everything's puppy dogs and rainbows and the way it's always been. And gee, thanks, Al. You were such a consummate pro. And yay, Al. No, he got nothing. Nothing. And it's for one of two reasons. One, and this is what I love the most, it's out of Celtics pettiness, which I can appreciate because the Celtics should be petty on this, and they should be mad. They should be pissed that Al Horford left to go to the 76ers. Don't be mad that he left. He left to go to the 76ers. Ugh. Like, they should be mad about that. And I think that they are being petty about it, and good for them. And the other thing, if we're being honest with ourselves, which is sometimes tough to do, Celtics fans, admit it, Al Horford doesn't deserve a Celtics tribute video. Again, you want to get up, you want to cheer for him? Good. I wouldn't blame you. He was the consummate professional. Al was Steady Eddie here. Or Steady Al. But does he deserve a tribute video? Like, come on. Like, he was a nice guy. He was Steady Eddie. He was a consummate professional. He was a fan favorite. He played hard, and he didn't win dick. I said it yesterday in Felgrown Mets. He's like Mike Greenwell. Mike Greenwell's one of my favorite Red Sox players of all time. Got to meet him. So nice. It's like painfully nice. But he didn't get a tribute video and didn't deserve one because he didn't win jack. Like, nice doesn't deserve it. You know, come on. Like, nice guys finish last. It's an old saying for a reason. Like, Al, great. We love you. And I'm sure the Hawks fans felt the same damn way. And I'm sure they gave him a tribute video in the past, too. But, like, enough with the stupid tribute videos. So good on the Celtics. And of the two, I really think it's more the, you know, I obviously have my strong feelings on Al Horford. Called him the magician. Poof, watch him disappear for a reason for a while there. But I credit to the Celtics because they're being petty here. They're angry about it. And rightfully so. You left to go to the 76ers. Ugh. Oh, good for you for not having a video.
I'm with you. I'm so happy that they didn't have it. I was really nervous.
Oh, I figured it was a lock.
Yeah, I was nervous that Kyrie might have gotten one if he showed up that day, too. And really, throughout the whole NBA, it's kind of an issue, too, with the player empowerment like kind of era here where you want free agents to be attracted. So we're really nice to players. We give everyone a tribute video. And you go back and you read some of the stuff in terms of the load management, and half these teams don't even believe in it. But if you want to attract free agents, you have to keep your stars happy, so you have to let them sit out. So for them to kind of go against the grain here and not give a player that averaged 14 points a game for you in his best year in a Celtics uniform is,
right,
I think, a pretty good sign. And like you said, too, Kyrie Irving is the best thing that possibly happened to Al Horford, because otherwise you're looking at a guy, like you said, that just left for your arch rival in the Eastern Conference. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Tariq in Boston on Al Horford. Hello.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Hey, what's up?
You know, you're right. The Celtics are being petty, and they should be. I bet you in that exit interview, Danny Ainge and maybe even Brad asked Al where his leadership went. You know, we needed somebody to step up and grab the team by the throat, our own team, and get them kind of locked in, and nobody grabbed the reins. And we all talked about Al's leadership the whole time he was here, and how he's a stabilizing force and, you know, kept everybody unified. And there was none of that against Milwaukee. And I bet you in the negotiations, you know, they said, hey, look, we're kind of void of some leadership here. You need, if you want this money, you need to step into that role. He wanted no part of it. I think he absolutely balked at it. And you can see where he decided to go, a place where he's the third, fourth guy on the totem pole again.
Yeah, it's a good point, Tariq. He's not passive on the floor. But I think last year proved, in terms of the leadership, like you're just saying, like off the floor, behind the scenes, passive. Poof, watch him disappear. He was fine. Like, I don't know, the Al Horford stands, and Jimmy Stewart, love you. Like, he's one of them, too. Like, at times, it's like, all right, like, we get it, guys. Like, he's good, not great. Like, get over it. I'm kind of glad he's gone in a way. Like, yeah, he was a stabilizing presence at times, and they miss him defensively at times. And great with the pick and roll and all that stuff, but like, maybe one of the most overrated professional athletes of my lifetime.
I'm like, so with you, too. And just like, you know, he's like the classic player, too. If you knew basketball, you actually know what he does.
Oh,
you
right,
know what
yeah,
I mean? Like, oh, F off. No way. This guy's overrated.
And my eyes work. Well, if you knew basketball. All right, stop it. Joe in the car on Jason Tatum. Hello.
Hey, I just want a couple quick points here. What you guys are saying, I think that Al Horford's kind of exactly what the team needs at the right price. I don't think he's a max player. I think he is overrated. I am kind of glad he's not on the team. But my second point is I think the crazy correlation between Tatum and Rondo. I feel like when the lights are the brightest, when it's fourth quarter, down three, and 2 minutes left in the game, he hits a three right in Embiid's face. But for the times on defense, it just seems like he's just lacking focus on. I mean, he drops 30 points in the Clippers game, and I think it was two games later he goes like three of 18 from the field or whatever. And then it was kind of a saving grace for me. It was like, oh, he's back in the gym at 3 o'clock in the morning working hard. But I don't think just because you're working hard in the gym and perfecting your craft doesn't mean that you can perform without focusing. And I think that he's one of those people that needs to be down 3, 2 minutes left with a hand in his face to even, like, be interested in trying hard and interested in actually focusing on the game. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Joe. It's annoying. It's like, I'm sure how 76ers fans and, you know, like fans of the league feel about Joel Embiid. Like, oh, you only show up when the lights are the brightest. Like, Tatum has some of that in him. There's some dog in Tatum. That's what's frustrating. His game is inconsistent. He talks about how he wants to be an all-star. He gets on Ainge saying he should have been the number one pick. He wants the next payday. He's just, he lacks self-awareness. I think that's the worst attribute to Jason Tatum in his game. The shot's getting, I think, worse, or it's just kind of the same as it was last year. Got to get rid of that fall-away jumper and get out of let's decobify Jason Tatum in that part of the game. Passing, bit sloppy. Defense, it's non-existent without Marcus Smart for times. He's got to step back and get better perspective, and maybe we'll see a better Jason Tatum. But it is frustrating to watch him. All right, no commercials here, just the Sports Hub headlines with Tim McCone. We've got 1 hour to go of a Gasper-less Gasper Murray, as I believe it. I think it's the last show of the year for us, because next week, Pats, Bills on a Saturday. The week after that, Saturday after Christmas, hell if I know. Tune in to find out who's going to be on. So, the final hour of Gasper Murray for 2019. We're going to do it next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.